Hey, everybody, welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I am back again with Dom. Dom, how are you this week?
I am fantabulous. How are you?
Oh, fun. I like it. You're spicing it up, it seems like, this season. That's a fun adjective to get things going. I am doing quite well as well, Dom. We are, of course, back today to talk about episode 2 of Survivor 35. Glad that you're in such a good mood to be getting into this. I know a lot of people have been feeling like this is maybe one of the slower starts to a season in recent memory. And while we probably will agree with that as a general sentiment, I still think there's a decent amount to be getting into this week.
Yeah, I think I actually like this episode a lot more than you did. I know you were a little bit down on it based on the discussions we had pre-show, so it's going to be interesting to see exactly what we disagree about.
Well, I think this season is just kind of suffering from the same thing, frankly, that last season also seemed to go through, which is unanimous votes early on. Even in the moment, I think, I think I'm not giving it retrospective credit for being entertaining enough in the moment when the vote seems so obvious in retrospect, I would say. And even and this one, I don't think I would even say was overly suspenseful for me, at least in the moment. Like, I was just not ever buying the idea that Patrick would be the one who got voted out this week.
So you don't really have issue with the way they handled it. It's more just what the situation was to begin with.
Right. I'm not saying they're doing a poor job with how they're showing this story. I think it's just a slow start to a season when we're in kind of the era of a lot of active game situations going on, to have back-to-back unanimous votes where it seems like, at least if the vote is any indicator, that everyone's just kind of in on the plan and that this person was the clear boot. There have certainly been more exciting starts to seasons in recent memory.
So in your view, then, is there something they can do to avoid that? So maybe they could just avoid any pretense that someone other than Simone is going home and really embrace that and play into it and give her this amazing one episode story arc. And maybe that would be a welcome distraction from a lot of the, as you said, the fairly kind of one note episodes we see early on in these seasons.
Maybe that is something that they should do more often with some of these early boots. I don't know if Simone is necessarily the right person, but it is.
Oh, I think she is exactly the right person.
Okay.
I think if you're going to do this, you need someone who can be portrayed as so hubristic, so arrogant. And Simone, I'm confident, was shit-talking other people so much in her confessionals, if her preseason stuff had anything to go by, that you have ample material to set up this contrast between everything that she's saying about other people and then everything they're saying in turn about her, and
yeah,
which of them actually turns out to be right.
Right. I think maybe for me, it's almost more frustrating when they include stuff like about Simone, like, for instance, her confessional very early on about, like, oh, it's so hot here, there's not even air conditioning. And for me, right away, that's an indicator, okay, this is obviously she's not going to be winning the game anytime soon if that's the way that they're presenting her. And it certainly seems like she's starting this episode off on the wrong foot. And as I mentioned, the Patrick decoy just seemed so forced to me that I guess what I'm objecting to is the attempt at presenting it like it's going to be dramatic. I think actually while it first to me sounded almost ridiculous, the idea that they would forego the concept of like suspense for a vote, it's so rare that they end up doing that, but when it does happen, I think very famously Roger, the merge boot in Survivor Amazon, was a good example of this, where they just piled on. It made it very clear the whole time, okay, this is all going to get turned on Roger. Maybe that is a very underutilized technique these days on Modern Survivor. I actually think you might be onto something.
Well, thank you. I'm surprised to hear you say that. The issue maybe is that Patrick was an appealing decoy insofar as I think people genuinely are starting to find him a bit irritating, and it is somewhat plausible that he could be set up for some dramatic fall from grace himself. However, I think this is a golden opportunity to experiment with something new, and I'm a little disappointed now. Now that I'm talking about the idea, I'm so attracted to it that I'm starting to think the episode was bad because they didn't go for it.
Yeah, I like that call, and you are right that Simone is probably a better than average person as far as who's going to be giving them stuff that they can use to kind of hang that person out to dry on national TV. I definitely believe they probably could have done a compelling job of that with Simone if they had been so inclined. But Dom, before we dive into how all of this goes wrong for her, let's quickly just set up one thing, which is that our Big Brother 7 podcasts are back in full swing now, in case anyone has missed that. What?
We did not miss the first week in, you know, a month and a half. So let's not declare it too quickly. But Well, I guess we had week three and then week four with Ian. So actually, yeah, we are.
Right.
If the recent trends are anything to go by, we should be all set for the rest of the season.
Right. Not only has week three gone up, week four is in the books. It's actually already up for people who are patrons of ours. And if you are interested in becoming one such person, it is patreon.com/Dom and Colin. And it seems like that's going to be the plan as things are looking right now is we'll record about a week ahead of time. And these BB7 podcasts will get released on Tuesdays is going to be the plan. So look for week four with special guest Ian Terry on the main feed on Tuesday. And as mentioned, already up for the patrons. And that will hopefully be a continued thing where the patrons can keep getting episodes early and then they will go out Tuesday for the public. And then, of course, going forward, all of these bonus seasons that we cover are just going to be patron only and they will go up for the public never. So patreon.com/Dom and Colin if you would like to get involved with that.
Yeah, and that's going to be a more general perk as well. So a lot of the stuff we do that isn't time sensitive will be on a brief delay so that patrons can have early access to it.
Right, definitely. So Dom, I think unless you have anything else that you want to plug or bring up early on, let's get into this episode. And I want to start with just kind of a general discussion about something that came up last week, but I don't know where a better spot would be for this particular angle. We're certainly going to talk a lot this week about Chrissy, but I want to talk in particular about that idol that is now left over, and it's flagged up in the previously on. Jeff says, Chrissy voted out Katrina, holding on to her secret but now powerless idol. I know this is something that I've wanted for a really long time, having an idol that does nothing in the game, where you think you're about to get an idol, and instead it doesn't have any actual powers, but you're free to say that it does whatever you want, and it looks very much like a real idol. It's indistinguishable from what a real idol would actually look like. I'm actually feeling a little bit differently about this, given the way that Chrissy came into possession of this, where to me, the idea was always someone thinks they're going to get a real idol and it just doesn't have any powers. To me, Chrissy was essentially just handed an unfalsifiable fake idol. And this just is one of the most ridiculous freebies in the history of Survivor. Where are you on that? Is this a conditionally good or bad twist?
Yeah, I do see what you're saying. Do we know if she got the piece of paper that accompanies a normal idol saying, congratulations, you found a hidden immunity idol, these are the rules and such and such, or was it different given that this was a unique situation?
I think she just got the piece of paper that explains what the rules for how she could play it that night if she was so inclined would be, and thus, to answer what I would imagine you're getting at, there is no piece of paper that is going to be worth anything for her at this point.
Yeah, I bring this up because we had a recent episode on Australian Survivor where someone who was slated as the obvious boot decided, okay, my one Hail Mary play is going to be pretend that I have a fake idol. And he basically failed at the first hurdle because people were like, okay, do you have the piece of paper or anything? Or do you have the obvious like accoutrements that come with this? And he just wasn't able to produce any of those.
Such as an idol?
Yeah, well, that too. That was the main ingredient that was missing. But I think even if we'd been able to cobble something together out of like ropes and beads or whatever it was that Bob Crowley somehow dug out of the earth in Gabon, then yeah. Even if he'd done that, then I'm not sure it would have worked because he was lacking all that extra stuff.
Yeah, I definitely would be on board with that assessment as well as I stumble through this. But it does feel like, at least for me, like with Chrissy, she is being set up to end up actually using this. It seems like they wouldn't be mentioning this possible angle so often and bringing it up in the previously on and have her comment about that exact scenario right away in the episode, unless this was something that was actually going to come into play down the line.
Oh, a little bit of editing analysis coming in here.
We'll keep most of that edit discussion. We did seem to get a lot of people happy with us. People were happy with us for boxing that off, the more intense edit discussion, until the very end of the podcast. So we will definitely hope to do as well as we can in that department as this week as well. But it seems impossible to ignore, I would say, that they are going out of their way to set up that, oh, Chrissy still has this idol she could cause some disruption with.
So where is the line for you in terms of fair versus unfair? So is it just because if you're someone else who Chrissy is trying to convince that she has a fake idol, you basically have to believe her, right? Like, she has everything that she would need to make it convincing. And it's not like if someone falls prey to that, you're going to be saying, oh, you idiot, how could you believe what she was saying? Because she actually has everything she needs to make it work. So is your objection that it's almost too convincing? It's convincing enough that someone should believe it.
Right. That is the objection. And Stephen, I think, framed this well on not on Know It Alls, but on the recap podcast that he was on this week on RHAP about it's. I think it's unfair to the players that they have no way of distinguishing this from an idol that actually does something. And I know that it's such a fine line for me, because I don't think I would have a problem with this if it was Ryan's tribe went to tribal council and he just chose not to use it, and then he had this really convincing looking fake idol for the rest of the game, because Ryan was the one who found that secret advantage envelope on the boat. And I don't know why that makes such a difference for me, why it being in that person's possession swings the needle from fair to foul for me, but for whatever reason it does, that it just winds up in Chrissy's lap, that because she was, as far as I can tell, given this idol because she did such a poor job in that first challenge, she now has this crazy advantage going forward through no real effort of her own, and in fact, because she did a pretty bad job.
I know this idea has been floated in a few other places, but what if it was a fake idol that was found? So you follow the clues, you stick your hand on the tree, you think you've got this moment of triumph because you found the idol. Instead, the piece of paper says, congratulations, you found a fake hidden immunity idol, which isn't real, but if you want to try and trick someone that you have one, then you do you.
Right.
Would you think that that's legitimate, or is that also across that boundary for you?
That was the initial idea that I submitted to the second ever Survivor Tank was, you think you got a regular idol, but it turns out this one doesn't have any powers, but you can say it does whatever you want.
All right, so it's a combination of it's too convincing, and also Chrissy didn't have to put any effort in or even get lucky herself in order to receive it. It was almost just handed to her by some external power.
Right, exactly. And I think I didn't address enough one thing that I think you've been trying to frame as important, and I agree, which is it's too convincing. I think that is a big issue that I have with it. And it's convincing because it's real. It's made by the Survivor art department because it was intended potentially to be played as an actual idol. But now that it doesn't have any powers, in that think tank idea, I would want it to be a convincing looking idol. It really comes down to me, I suppose, to just be an issue with how Chrissy came to be the one in possession of this idol that does nothing.
Yeah, potential to have some major shots fired at the art department, by the way. If someone, like if Chrissy tries to tell someone that it's real and they take one look and say, wait, seriously, you expect me to believe that? And then just completely ignore the idea? Like, that would be a major blow to my professional honor if someone rejected one of my fake idols like that.
Well, that's the thing, is it's not just like a seashell or whatever that's been attached to a rope. There's like a gold statue on it, like something, it's completely, yeah, it's, there's no way it could possibly be fake. It has to have been made by the Survivor art team. So that's why I think it's just such ridiculous leverage, given how Chrissy came about being the one to come into possession of it.
Well, so what do you think about the opposite idea, where there's a real idol, but it looks unconvincing? It looks like it's just been tied together from, you know, straw and wicker tape and Elmer glue.
But that's what I thought they were going to do with whatever one it was, where they said, like, the idols, I guess it was Millennials versus Gen X, when they're like, we're going to hide the idols with seashells, or they're going to be inside the coconut. I thought the idol was going to be just like a seashell or like a stick or something, because I think that is, if you want to balance it out, the direction you have to go is don't make the fake idols even look even more believable. Don't make it just easier to make that to make them look realistic. I do think they were on to something with make the real idols look like they could easily be fixed. I think that is the key, is you need to be questioning the validity in the other direction of, this person is claiming this is a real idol, but that's exactly what they would say, and it looks so fake that how can I go with it? I think that that is more the direction I would at least hope to see them leaning in the future.
Yeah, I like that we set a target runtime of under an hour for this episode, and we've already spent a good 15 minutes talking about one hypothetical fake idol, so really on track. I'm sure this will be out the door quickly, and I can get to bed before 4 a.m.
Yeah. Well, let's, I think, dive into the episode itself, Dom, and I think, as usual, in these three tribes, let's go through the tribes that don't end up going to this vote first and just get our general takes about all of the characters from those two teams out there first. And let's stay with the heroes and Chrissy here, who went to our last tribal council, and after that, everyone is back at camp, very sketched out by Alan. The core four is dead. I still question whether whether or not that was ever really a thing, or if Chrissy was not as on the bottom as the episode would have led us to believe during that first vote. But it now looks like Chrissy, and she even recognizes her spot, has gotten a lot better as, with Alan freaking people out, she is now potentially the swing vote between a power couple and just two people who are worried about that power couple, which is not a bad spot to be, Dom, right?
Yeah, I think this whole mom squad idea is an obvious fabrication. And the thing is, it works because that is something that you see so often on Survivor, is the older women are the automatic outcasts. And especially if you have more than one of them on the same tribe, they're kind of grouped together as the old women out. But that's, I think that idea is kind of self-perpetuating, in that when Survivor uses that stereotype over and over again, and every single season is, oh, well, she doesn't really fit in, and she struggles to work with this younger crowd, then I think people go into future seasons believing that more strongly than they did beforehand. And so it becomes reality the more that they keep using it.
Yeah, no, I definitely think there is something to that. Now, Chrissy, I am definitely buying Chrissy at this point, and we'll certainly have more to say about her like winning chances as we talk more about the edit specifics. But just in general, Chrissy really seemed to be getting a lot of the narration here on this Heroes Beach, and it seemed to be the return from Tribal Council seemed to be presented almost entirely from her point of view of, okay, now how do we deal with this power couple? And most importantly, why, you know, JP and Ashley are making her nervous. Alan is also, of course, making her nervous, but Ben is someone she could really see herself working with. What did you make of the new potential power couple part two on this tribe emerging here between Ben and Chrissy?
I loved it, and I thought both of them had fantastic episodes. Ben already was at the top of the power rankings for a lot of people, including myself, but Chrissy, there were some questions for me of, okay, she was able to get through the first episode. It seemed like she was in a better position than that first episode made it look like, but how is she actually doing out there? And it turns out she's doing pretty damn well,
right,
if this is anything to go by, because she has Ashley and JP wanting to work with her. It seems like she was on good terms with Alan. Everyone else, it seemed, was kind of freezing Alan out a bit, or just kind of going through the motions to make him feel okay. She was actively telling Alan that, okay, we're still good, don't worry about it, you don't have to cause any trouble. And then with Ben, like, there was this understanding that we're the only two people in this tribe who are sane, who know what's going on, and we should work together on that basis. And I really enjoyed seeing that.
Yeah, and totally. And it got me wondering. I know they are going to go on to be one of the winners of this immunity challenge, but the only other thing we really saw from this Heroes tribe was JP going to Chrissy and talking to her for a bit, and then she goes back and meets up with Ben to talk about how all of that went, and she says, okay, so our options are either bring in Alan or bring in Ashley. So it sounds like to me like JP did not do such a stellar job with whatever he was trying to pitch to Chrissy, because it seems like he is the clear fifth in her mind. But if this hero team does go to another vote, how do you see that going?
It might be a case of just ditching Alan to keep the tribe drama free, because Chrissy, I think, knows that she has Ashley and JP wrapped around her finger. She has Ben as this solid ally that's a good sounding board for her. And Alan's the only person left, as someone who just is causing trouble, who's maybe a bit unpredictable and who she can't exert the same kind of influence over. I did like, by the way, I thought it was interesting that the way she framed it was, oh, I'm an actuary, I'm able to process data, and the data is telling me that Alan can't be trusted, as if that's something which only an actuary could recognize. No one else from the first episode thought that Alan was a bit dodgy at all.
Yeah, I'm a doctor, I diagnose things, and I'm diagnosing that Alan is off the reservation. Yeah.
I really hope this isn't the theme for the rest of the season, that every time Chrissy has to make any kind of decision, it's, oh, well, what are the numbers telling me? It's like, you think back a few seasons ago, Liz Markham, right, was I think she's a quantitative analyst or something like that. She could very, very easily have framed things in a certain way, but she didn't, because she was not around for long enough to make those decisions, because of not not being socially integrated in the tribe. And that's a crucial thing. That's why Chrissy is able to have this information and make those calls in the first place. It's not because she's an actuary and she's able to like run the numbers on some mental abacus or anything like that.
Yeah, one thing, and maybe it's not a big surprise that they don't often get into it, but you would think, or I would have thought, that given how much people are thinking at this point, I would say, about not only the current rounds, but also how things are going to go assuming the boot goes like how they want it to, and I would guess they're talking in their confessionals a lot more about how this round is impacting future rounds. It surprises me that we don't see more confessionals just laying out survivor math. Like, just we get the hilarious, let's all laugh at Brad Culpepper as he does the 4 into 9 equals out or whatever. But it surprises me that we don't see more open discussion in confessional form about kind of like along the same lines as the famous Onion confessional, breaking down how the Onion Alliance was going to work in Survivor Gabon. It seems to me like we would get that pretty much every season, and we really never seem to.
And thank God for that, honestly, because I think back to, I think it was Josh's edit in San Juan del Sur, which was so unhilariously one note about it, is every single confessional was just lists of names of, okay, these people on this side and these people on the other side, and so therefore these people are going to vote this way, and your eyes would just glaze over 5 seconds in because you'd heard it all before.
Right.
If you hadn't, you could figure it out, and it was just empty content that was wasting time.
Right. I guess the way that we see it, and it's certainly become you know, an issue that I think we even saw them in season 34 put a twist into the game to try to prevent. The way we hear about survivor math is when we get vote splits and people talking about how all, you know, X people need to be voting on person A and Y people need to be voting on person B, and in case an idol gets played, we need to have, this will be the next highest number of votes. I think that is definitely something that people are tired of, and I'm sure you're right that if we did hear more survivor math, it would get old very quickly. It stands out to me because it seems like people would be talking a lot more in those terms relative to how often it makes air.
And one thing I liked about this episode in particular was we learned about the strategy and the alliances that were forming by learning about the people involved. And sometimes it kind of struck the wrong tone, so the whole thing about Chrissy being an actuary. But a good example of it was Lauren talking about how, well, she's more of an introvert, and Patrick's goofy antics are kind of rubbing her the wrong way. So we learned about Lauren, and we learned why in future episodes, if Lauren and Patrick are on opposite sides and other people are able to use that to turn the two of them against each other, we learn about the genesis of that and why, yeah, that's actually a convincing thing that they wanted to go for.
Yeah. And to quickly go back to, I'm going to actually disagree with you, I think, about if the
hero, dare you?
If, yeah, I know. If the heroes go back to another vote, I don't think Alan is a bad call by any stretch, and I think it's certainly possible. But it really did seem like JP, whatever he was selling, Chrissy was not buying. And I would guess that based on them including her saying, okay, do we bring in Alan or bring in Ashley, that if they did decide to bring in Alan, that JP would be the one that they vote off and not Ashley. It seems like they would collectively feel better about Ashley. So I actually feel like JP would be my pick if this Heroes tribe does end up going back to another vote, especially because they, even without JP, are still, I would think, the most strong physical team if it's a, you know, like a weight-bearing challenge or something. Ben and Alan are certainly not going to be any slouches in that department. To say nothing, I think the women also, Ashley and Chrissy, could also certainly hold their own.
Yeah, but one other thing that we saw this episode is how, we're voting them out because they didn't do well in challenges is often cover for, we want some reason to vote them out because we don't like them or we just don't want to work with them. So with Simone, the moment they lost a challenge, we had this cut to Devon saying, oh, well, she blew the puzzle today, so she's got to go. It's so unfortunate. When in reality, I think Simone's card was marked the whole time, and this was just the excuse they needed to get her out. And now that Chrissy seemingly is in good with everyone, I think she has the leeway she needs. If she blows one challenge or whatever, that's really not gonna matter.
Right. I think Boston Rob put it in the terms of, like, the challenges matter in terms of if you need to sell someone on something, that's a good pitch to make, but they don't actually matter. They're just there to provide incidental arguments for whatever you actually want to happen, making that go through. So any other takes on this Heroes tribe? We didn't get to see too much from them, particularly from anyone other than Chrissy this week, but anything else you want to get out there?
There was a kind of fun moment when someone said something like, oh, JP's bringing a big one back. And they meant the lobster, but it cut to, like, his bulge while he was holding it in the background, which I know there were lots of thirsty fans on Twitter who will that will keep them going for the next week or so.
Okay, well, I'm glad that we were able to get that on the historical record to make sure that we didn't let that go unmentioned. Dom, I think let's move over to the Healers tribe. And I think a really interesting development here, of course, on the Healers tribe this week. Joe really doing his best to fulfill this prophecy of new Tony. He's running all over the island in search of the hidden immunity idol as soon as everyone else leaves to go to the water well. He finds a clue printed on a tree, Dom. I'll take this in a couple of different parts. First, are you into putting the clue on a tree? Did you like that kind of twist? I don't see how it's too different from just putting that same map on a piece of paper inside the tree. But just what was your take on the clue physically almost being like tattooed upon the tree?
I don't see why this is something that I need to have an opinion about. It seemed fine. I don't know how else you're going to do it. You got to put it somewhere, so unless you have any better ideas.
Well, I think it's just an easier way than hiding it in a on a piece of paper inside a tree. It's a lot harder to miss this giant thing with a big yellow water well symbol. As soon as you encounter that tree, you're going to find it. And of course, job well done at the end of this segment, by the way, from Cole going and chopping that clue off of the tree. I know a lot of people were up in arms.
Yes.
People who missed that didn't see. They're like, oh, why didn't you go and do it? He did. That even a new Survivor player 5 or 6 days into their first time has that impulse. So
I just want to say, I would definitely forget to do that, by the way. I would be so just like giddy that I found this clue and hopefully found the idol with it that, I would just completely forget. Then someone would find it and get suspicious. But I actually, now that I think about it, I like having it just in plain view because as it sounds right now, you can like comb every inch of the island and really pay attention to what you're seeing and still miss it because there's one small detail that didn't catch your eye. Whereas I like that you can exhaustively comb the entire landscape and know that if you haven't seen it yet, you haven't been looking in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
If this becomes the expectation, then you can know, okay, I've gone through this whole area, I've uncovered this part of the map, and it's just not there, so I can move on to something else. And I don't know how large the location actually is. I don't know if you can cover all of it in a small space of time, but I almost like the idea of, okay, if someone wants to put the effort in to go to the other side of the island and it's 2.5 hours away or something, and they can be rewarded by knowing that there's going to be a clue there at the end.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, is potentially if this becomes standard, people will have a much easier time combing for idols. And I think there's probably a school of thought that would say, oh, you know, people being able to find idols too easily is one of things that makes New School Survivor so much worse than Old School Survivor. But my take would be the idols are going to get fat. Like, there's no season that's going to play out anymore where there aren't going to be idols realistically all over the place, like 3 or 4 idols at least over the course of the whole season. So I have no issue with them wanting to get those idols in there as early as possible. Now, I do wonder what your take is on, it's not a clue to the idol. This is a map directly to the idol. Once you can decipher what the map actually means, where are you on that? Do you like clues or do you like X marks the spot?
And this really wasn't a brain teaser. It was, okay, if you can figure out what this square might be, and there's only really one square landmark out there as far as I can tell, then you basically got a direct path to it. And I think maybe you make them go through something a little more complicated than that. I think back to Yule on Cook Islands when he goes to exile and he has to like decipher this and line everything up perfectly so that like when the sun's there at the right time, then he knows what spot to dig in. Something like that I think would be quite cool. But this was, there was no suspense of the search, right? You knew as soon as they figured out it was near the well that of course they're going to get it.
Right, yeah. I think what I like, and this leads into part 3 of the question, is I'm into the idols being buried. I am not into people just kind of stumbling upon idols, but I don't have an issue with a map to it when it is buried, particularly when it's buried. I think in a perfect world for me, it would be, like you mentioned, that's that kind of idol era I thought was the best with Cook Islands and Yule and how that idol came to be. But that requires an exile thing. Like, I love the angle of the idol everyone knows is off on exile, and they all know, obviously, who has had the opportunity to go to exile. So there's a limited number of people who could theoretically even have the idol. I think that makes it interesting, not only in terms of like game where people know, okay, this is the higher likelihood person to have the idol or whatever, but also in terms of who you're sending to Exile Island. I thought was always a really interesting decision in all of the many seasons we saw where everyone knew that the idol was off on exile.
Yeah, I don't know if I like the idea of idols being buried the whole time, because it seems super awkward if someone gets the clue, figures it out, solves everything, goes to the right spot, and then they don't find it because they're digging, they're scrabbling around, and it just happens to be buried like 2 inches away on the other direction. Mm-hmm. Right? I like the idea that if you crack the code, if you solve the puzzle, then you're gonna find it.
Well, yeah. What I think, frankly, the best idle search for me, the couple of times that they have done it, Yao Man and Kelly Wentworth having to find idols at the camp, like underneath the camp in Yao Man's case, and then it was like also underneath, I think, the shelter in Kelly Wentworth's case. I think that is, didn't Amanda Kimmel find one underneath the tribe flag in Micronesia? I think that is where they need to go back to more, in where they hide the idols, is having things right at camp, or even directly in underneath the shelter where you have to wait until the middle of the night, but items around camp, like in China, where it was the placard on the top of that little building or whatever it was that they had at each of their camps, or Philippines, where it was the top of the rice container, and then people could notice, hey, what the hell happened to the top of the rice container here? I think that is a direction that I would really love for them to go more often when it comes to the idols. But let's get into this specific idol. Dom, Joe finds this map. He thinks that square is the raft or whatever. He can't figure it out. He brings Cole in and tells him about this idol clue. Cole immediately sees it and recognizes, oh, no, that's the water well. He blurts it out. I've seen Cole taking some heat for, why would you say that? Why not keep that information to yourself? Where do you stand on that?
Well, so we know from one of Cole's Instagram comments, I believe, that it wasn't intentional in any way. It was just, oh, I was so overcome with actually figuring it out that I couldn't help blurt it out. And obviously that's not ideal. You want that to be something that you choose to do. But I kind of like that he's so giddy with excitement about it that it's not even a decision for him.
Right. I think that's what makes Cole within the game. And I think it does do a really good job of making Joe trust him, is not putting the thought into, oh, should I keep this information to myself? When you just blurt it out like that and make it clear that you're in on this being a team effort, I think Joe is out there looking for people who he thinks are definitely not going to turn on him. And I think Cole just did himself a great favor in staying on Joe's good side. And with a player as potentially erratic as Joe might be, if he's in a position to make some kind of moves, I definitely think that's valuable. And I also just think having that kind of personality like Cole, like I would say, like Steven has a better mind for the game of Survivor than JT does, but JT's just kind of organic reactions and being that kind of sweet guy who's just out for everyone's best interest, I think served him really well, even if he wasn't thinking about the game on the same level. It's not always best to be in there playing as like the active known game bot by any stretch. I think this is not the worst thing in the world for Cole, to nearly the extent that people are making it out to blurt this out. And Joe is the one who, when they go digging for this idol, comes up with it. I imagine production is thrilled. Dom, are you thrilled that Joe has an idol?
I guess so. It really depends on what he does with it. By the looks of things, he is going to overplay super aggressively. He's going to, now that he has this, we spoke about this with Tony, of how like he obviously wants to make moves. He obviously wants to be Tony and play the way his personality is going to suggest. But he also is trying to win the game. He needs to feel some element of security. And now that, and when Tony found those idols, plural, that really allowed him to do that and just do whatever he wanted. And for Joe, obviously, this isn't quite as overpowered. He does need to know when to play it and if to play it. But I think now that he has this, he's going to feel empowered to just, like, if he wants to go after Mike because Mike looked at him the wrong way, he's going to do it. And if he gets scared of Cole because Cole was too nice in the way that he gave Joe the clue, that he's going to do that too. And I imagine it's not going to work out too well for him, but I'm going to enjoy seeing him try.
Right. I'm definitely in on Joe being one of the people who finds an idol this season. I'm sure there are viewers out there who do not need the new Tony Vlachos to also be the guy who gets the idol. They feel like they've seen this before, and that's understandable. I'm here for it, for the time being at least. It seems like Joe could definitely bring a lot of entertainment with an idol, and that is really all I care about. So, Dom, Cole and Joe have this pseudo-semi-bromance going on. Meanwhile, it seems like Cole and Jessica are also connecting here. Any thoughts on this kind of budding showmance and how that's going to play into things on this tribe? Because it really seems like this is the tribe that we haven't seen much of politically, and so when we get something about any duo coming together, I think it's worth taking a look at.
Was there ever any doubt for you that it would be that there would be a showmance, and that of course it was going to be Cole and Jessica?
I would have seen. I don't know what the single and or ready to mingle status is on the other tribes. I could have seen. Like I said, preseason. I think Devin was cast there to be like the next Taylor from Millennials versus Gen X, so he would have been probably my front runner to be out there looking for a showmance. But no, this is not a surprise at all that Jessica and Cole have come together. Do we have a Joel? Is Joel there? J-O-L-E instead of J-O-E-L? Is that a good portmanteau name? Do we have Kessica? That's no good.
Yeah, Kessica is not so great. Do you think if it had been Devin and Jessica on the tribe instead, then we'd be dealing with Jevon, Desica? That, both of those sound a lot better, I'm going to say.
I think that is a very distinct possibility. I have a hard time saying yes, absolutely, but I definitely think that scenario would be in play. And I'm definitely curious to see how these two fit into this tribe now, because unlike JP and Ashley, it seems to me like they would be they are being not viewed as much of a threat at this point. Granted, we didn't really even get to hear anything out of most of the other people on this tribe this week.
I wonder how interchangeable those two guys as well as JP are in that sense. So if you shuffle them around, then does Ryan still go for Cole if he's on his tribe? If it's Ashley and Devon, do they have a thing going? If it's JP who finds a clue and gives it to Joe, then does Joe trust him more or less? Because we talk about them as if they're somewhat interchangeable or just the same, but I think there are important differences there that really haven't been so much on display yet.
Yeah, I would agree with them not being on display yet, because my initial answer to your question of, you know, for instance, if we swap Cole and Devin, do Jessica and Devin get together and do Ryan and Cole get together? I would say yes to both of those things, given how these tribes seem to be breaking down.
Yeah, I think it's the two of them are much more similar than either of them are to JP. I think JP, as Chrissy identified, is just kind of there for the ride and doesn't seem all that clued in. Whereas Devin and Cole, both, they're aware that they're having kind of an easy ride in terms of connecting with people, and they are maximizing that. They're really exploiting it to the extreme. Mm-hmm. And they both seem self-aware enough, at least so far, that they're going to be able to judge who actually is committed to them and who is just like is going to flake out quite early.
Okay. So would you be forecasting at this point, if this tribe did end up going to a tribal council, that Cole would probably be one of the people like swinging the decisions, the decision-making process, where it seems like everyone would probably be coming to him to be in the majority?
I would think so, yeah. Although they did get off to kind of a bad start for me when Cole was like, oh, I see, Jessica's a bit older than me, and I don't know if she's going to be interested. That is bullshit. Cole has never had doubts about someone being interested in his entire life, and likely never will, at least for the next 20 years or so.
Yeah, I would co-sign that as well. We did not get to hear a whole lot from the other three this week, Mike, Rourke, and Desi. Although I would say pretty much everyone else, not only on this tribe, but we got something from each of the heroes and certainly something from each of the hustlers. So I would say as far as like the effort to balance the edit a bit more, I think actually they've done a better job so far this season than I have been giving them credit for.
We saw a slight hint of Desi, but that was her just talking about her Miss America experiences at camp. We didn't actually see a confessional with the whole name and the chyron and everything. So I think for most viewers, she wasn't really there in the episode at all. And then Rourke, someone who we were really hyping up preseason, and then after that premiere, was completely invisible. We got, as far as I can remember, nothing at all from Rourke. So a lot of Rourke fans out there disappointed this week.
Yeah. And by the way, we put out the call for the term for whatever the Rourke bandwagon should be, like the Malkaholics equivalent for Rourke. The best suggestion that I got, Rourkeaholics. How do you feel about
it? Great.
Really creative.
And shut it down right now, because we're not going to get anything better than that.
Rourkeaholics. So there you go.
I honestly had more faith in our listeners to come up with something better, but clearly that faith was ill-founded, as it always is.
Yeah. All right. Typical, guys. Good. Strong offer, as usual, from the listeners. Anyway, so I guess I'll ask the same question that we got into a little bit about the heroes earlier, which is, if these healers do end up going to a vote, how would you see that going?
I don't know, honestly. I think this is the one tribe that it's really hard to judge, because, and that's kind of trivial given that we've seen both of the other tribes go to tribal already. But I can't pinpoint someone who obviously is on the outs just yet, because you can say, well, based on what Joe's doing, it's either going to be Joe or someone that he's going against. So it could easily come down to that. But right now, we don't know who Joe is going against. Last week, it was Mike, and he still seems somewhat fixated on Mike. It could be Cole if he decides, well, Cole now knows too much and needs to be silenced. It could be, I don't know, maybe next week he's going to have some grudge against Desi or Rourke for some reason. It is honestly really hard to predict with him.
Yeah, no, I would agree that Joe is going to be probably the one, if they go to a tribal council, the story is going to be told from his perspective and what he's going to be doing with that idol.
Yeah, and my take, given the lack of any obvious option, is that's going to be when his story ends. I think Joe could very easily overplay himself out of the game this early.
I think that would be, like, if even as soon as this next week, I think that would inject a lot of life into the early part of this season, is potentially, not even if Joe is the one who leaves himself, although I agree that would be maybe even the highest upside outcome as far as an exciting episode goes. But I really would like to just see this Healers tribe end up going to a vote. And just for the sake of symmetry, it would be good to get all three of the tribes to each of the first three tribal councils. I think that would be a lot of fun as well. So I really have a lot of unanswered questions, I guess, about everything going on with this tribe. Although I do want to say, I actually really am interested in all six of the people on this tribe. I'm curious for sure to see how this goes for all of them. Okay, sorry, go ahead, Dom.
But does that make you want them to go to tribal so you can see them in action? Or do you want them to stay around for as long as possible and you maybe want all of them to make the swap so that you get to see them flourish in this safer environment?
Right now, it makes me want to see them go to a tribal council just to see how this group of six would play out. Because once we hit a swap, I actually, like we always talk about, the teams that don't have to go to a tribal council before the swap never had to actually commit to any of their allies, and maybe that will result in bonds that they think are stronger because they've never demonstrably seen anyone not be with them, or maybe it would result in bonds that are weaker because they haven't seen anyone demonstrably be with them. In this group's case, I would like to just see them go to a vote and see how this dynamic is actually playing pre-merge, because I think it's going to be or pre-swap, I should say. I'm assuming, of course, there's going to be a swap after episode 4-ish. And I think it's going to be important to know how things actually were looking on this Healers tribe. And thus far, I guess we just haven't gotten to see that. And so I'm hoping for more of that ASAP. But Dom, let's move into our final tribe here. Before we get into the immunity challenge and them going to tribal council, let's get into what we saw from the Hustlers. We continue to see Ryan and Devin broing down big time here. And I want to say, I owe the world an apology, I think, on Devin. I was someone who was very low on him preseason. I thought he was going to be like almost a lower upside Fabio. I really have actually been liking this guy through two episodes. And you were someone who liked him preseason.
So when you were berating me for having Devin higher than everyone else, what you were really saying was I was a visionary. I was right the whole time.
Right. I think that's I mean, again, and as I flagged up there, people did like Devin. I just thought that way. I had always interpreted that as being in on like the goofball fun character ahead of time. I didn't think people were seriously picking him to be a legitimate player within the game. Although I actually through two episodes feel like that could be the case. And Devin, he was, as I said, when we were drafting, very near the bottom of my draft board. It would have taken pretty ridiculous circumstances for me to draft him. And now I actually think he's in there with a very real chance to win.
Yeah, what are you making of this this Ryan and Devin pair so far? Because we've shown the two of them really linking up. My one concern I have so far is we haven't really seen Devin connect with anyone else or anyone else really say anything about him.
Right, and that's the thing. Part of the reason I'm so high on Devin is because of his proximity to Ryan, who really has seemed to be the narrator, along with Allie, I guess, on this Hustlers tribe. But Ryan, all of the scenes that are understandably framed around Ryan to this point seem to be featuring Devin in a positive light and in a way where we still do at least get to hear Devin's thoughts on things. I think that's pretty important. It's not just Ryan speaking on behalf of both of them. And it does seem to me like people, while we don't, you know, we just haven't had the time in any given episode to get everyone's takes on the rest of their tribe mates. Have we heard anyone say anything negative about Devin at this point?
I don't think we've heard anyone say anything at all about Devin, so no would be the answer.
Okay.
There.
Do you think he's not in there with a chance? Because I would say like I mentioned, Ryan is the main story on the Hustlers Tribe to this point for me, and I think Devin is right along there with him. I think these are clearly being set up to roll together for a little while.
Oh, I think he certainly has a chance, and right now, especially on a tribe like this, which I think if they have to go to tribal again, could easily just splinter in five different ways, just not giving other people anything to talk about is probably the best course of action, honestly.
Yeah, that, I think that's fair. And we hear early on in this episode that Ryan is connecting with everyone except for Simone. We get that confessional about how tough it is out there with no air conditioning. We do see Allie get a scene about how she wants to potentially bring Simone in to be on her side since no one else seems into her. And I don't know what it was, but this kind of like Simone burial started very early into the episode, which often means this person, we're just being set up and this is a fake out for some big twist that's coming later. It really felt to me, Dom, like there was never even a hint of a twist coming later. I know we got some almost obligatory setup for, hey, Patrick might be not blending in as well as he could be socially, but I never was really buying that anyone but Simone could leave here. And it really does seem to me, based on how it was presented, like she was clearly the one on the outs. I have not had much time to hear exit stuff this week, but is that lining up with how it's actually sounding like things were, like she just wasn't the one fitting in?
Pretty much, yeah. I do wonder if, so what I want to believe is going on here is everyone knew that Simone was going home, and so they set up this Patrick thing not as a question of, oh, maybe Patrick could go instead this week, but when Patrick eventually does go, whether it's in next week or after a swap or something, this will kind of explain why. This will give you insight into Patrick as a character that we won't have time for then, but we do have time for now.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I feel like we've been set up with three big pairs to this point in Ben and Chrissy, obviously, and Devin and Ryan. And I also feel like Allie and Patrick have been set up from the premiere to be a big pair. And that is the reason Patrick's edit to this point, not to get too far into like edit specific stuff, but just the way the difference between Patrick and all of the other five people that I've mentioned is what's leading me to believe that he's going to be the one to not make it out of that group. I feel like the rest are being set up to be pretty long lasting things. And I could see this actually turning on Patrick a lot sooner rather than later.
Can we talk about this Allie and Patrick pair? Because this whole idea that Patrick could go home here relies on you not knowing anything about Allie and Patrick as a duo so far, right? And I wonder if, like, so far it's fairly inconsequential. Like, it seemed pretty clear that Simone was going home. But later on, if it does seriously come down to Patrick versus someone else, or especially, let's say, the two of them get broken up at a swap, and then they come back at the merge, and there's this question of, oh, will Patrick still be loyal to Allie or not? And this does actually weigh on his mind. Then there is going to be a significant ingredient to the season that only a certain subset of the audience actually knows about.
Right. And I think that's why I felt so sure that it had to be Simone as soon as Patrick was the decoy, was because I knew about the Patrick and Allie connection and was just doing the math on, like, what are the possible chances that at this tribe's first vote, the other four strangers convince Allie to turn on someone she's known in real life?
But this made me think about the wider question of watching the show and the information that they choose to reveal, because so often when we or other people interview contestants, there's some like snippet of information which turns out to be crucial in understanding the decisions that they made and how those affected other people and so on that was left out of the show. And this might be one of those rare cases that we have access to that information ahead of time. And so we're already biasing our commentary and everything based on that. But maybe this is a standard thing that we should be assuming that they're, whenever someone makes a decision that just doesn't make sense based on what we're presented with, maybe the default assumption should be, okay, that's because you're missing ingredient C that you need in order for that to all come together.
Yeah, and to go back to something I hope people constantly are keeping in mind whenever we give any of these takes that I try to mention as often as I can, is we are only ever talking about the things that we see on the TV show. And for me, it is implicit that, of course, we're missing the lion's share of what's going into a ton of these decisions particularly on Survivor compared to Big Brother. But yeah, I think it is every single round, I always assume that there are a million, you know, hundreds of different factors that we could never be aware of going into the votes. But in this case, like, I think to get into what you're talking about, like, maybe there were other seasons back in the day where, like, if we had Twitter, if we had Josh Wigler out there, we would have known, hey, these two people randomly knew each other, and it's just never come up in the history of Survivor. Like, there are these old school kind of rumors that have gone around, and I don't know if they're confirmed one way or the other in a lot of different places. Like, for instance, in Micronesia, I've heard many different places that, like, James and Alexis were, like, forced out of the game for, like, cheating or so. Then they, like, had, I don't know how that's possible or what, like, it seems like they got them. There were just too many moving parts to make that the case, but I totally buy, in a very roundabout way here, that there are a ton of very meaningful things that they did not feel comfortable showing on TV that would completely explain a lot of the biggest unanswered questions in Survivor.
Yeah, and I wonder how many people listening now are just hearing about that example for the first time, and now their heads are whirring trying to figure out, like, okay, was there something in the season that I missed that hinted to that? Or, because this is, like, the moment you hear something like that, everything now looks different.
Right.
And you think about the whole season and the whole franchise in a different light. And it's like, we can only use either that or the Andy and Patrick thing as examples, because this information has either been come out or is rumored to have come out that we've heard about. There are other things which we can't even figure into this conversation because we just don't know about them yet.
Right. And I'd imagine Ali and Patrick knowing each other is going to continue to play a role on the island. I'm actually wondering, I continue to believe that they are framing their confessionals in open terms of we know each other. I don't know if I don't think it would shock me if they told the rest of the tribe that they knew each other. They're not going to lie about both being at Auburn at the same time. I wouldn't be surprised if the rest of the tribe knew that they knew each other in real life.
I would be surprised, actually. But like when Ali in this episode says, Patrick looks at me and I can just tell that he absolutely trusts me. I wonder why that is. You know, it's like there will be audience members watching who think, oh, Ali must have done a great job in roping him in and making him feel safe. And I'm sure she did. But it's much easier when you're starting, 10 feet up and you don't have that far to climb.
Right. No, I totally agree. And every confessional from them about the other one, I feel like reads so much differently when you know that it could be framed in terms of them knowing each other.
It always seems so disingenuous now. And what would be kind of interesting is if it actually doesn't have a big effect, if Ali isn't, if this isn't factoring into their relationship at all, but now as viewers who know about this, we're assuming it is. And because it isn't acknowledged on the show, we naturally assume it must be having this big effect that we're just not seeing.
Yeah, I mean, maybe down the line we will do incorrect math on, oh, well, these two knew each other and it was a no-brainer that they were going to work together, when in fact one of them was considering turning on the other person and it just never made air or whatever. I'm guessing we're going to be doing a lot of extrapolation, both correctly and incorrectly, about that duo for as long as they stay in the game. So let's, I guess, quickly just roll through this immunity challenge, where we get a fun water challenge with a very cool kind of like spatial reasoning puzzle, that I thought was a very fun kind of signpost, deal where you got to spin it around. And if any of the signs are too long and they hit the barrier, you've got the puzzle wrong. And most interestingly, Dom, the signposts were various old Survivor locations written on them. I like this. I like just any time they go back and acknowledge some of these really old school seasons, because it really, there are times where I watch Survivor and I wonder to myself if they, including Jeff Probst, even remember Survivor Vanuatu, for instance.
Yeah, and this is when it's really clutch to have a super fan on your tribe, because you can imagine there are a few of these recruits who are looking at those signposts like, I didn't even know that was a place that existed, let alone that Survivor had actually filmed in that location.
Well, maybe this is too obvious, and it also would look weird because of the combinations of letters being like the Philippines, for instance, or other long places that they've been were the longer signposts, of course, because there are more letters to fit on them. It would have been cool, though, if they'd done them in an order, in like chronological order. So if teams noticed that and they had someone who knew the season order, they would have an advantage.
Is that fair, though, to bring this? I guess technically it's outside the game information, right? Even though it shouldn't be.
Well, it's pop culture information. Anyone could know this.
Yeah, but you know that, in fact, the type of people that you like to cast quite often don't know this. So
yeah.
It kind of slants it unfairly towards the fans, although I imagine a lot of the fans out there wouldn't be all too upset about that, honestly. Like, if there's an advantage to be gained from knowing about the show, then that's just you doing your homework, right? That's no different from you knowing how the idols tend to be distributed or how the tribal council format works. Like, that's just something about the show that you ought to know.
Yeah, it's funny. I know you're not a challenge watcher, but they did on the challenge, it's their 30th season, and one of the challenges this season was lining up the logos from all of the seasons in order, and Johnny Bananas, who's like been on half of the season, like his team, he didn't even know the order of his own seasons. So I think that might be a little harder for some of the Survivor players who haven't even been on half the seasons to actually come up with these answers out there.
Yeah, you can have a lot of fun with that format. So here are all of these stupid comments Johnny Bananas has made over the course of 30 seasons. You have to rank them in chronological order to find the key to the challenge.
Yeah. Allie and Simone get a lead here on the puzzle for the Hustlers, but they end up not being able to get that puzzle done. And things continue just looking bleak for Simone. And actually, one thing that we skipped over on the Hustlers before the challenge was Lauren getting some screen time here, which I thought right away meant bad news for her. Oh, she's going to be the decoy boot along with Simone. I didn't even see that. Like, that's how not into the idea that Patrick might leave I was. I thought Lauren was going to go on to be our decoy boot even after the initial setup on Patrick. But I actually was, relatively speaking, impressed with Lauren at this point. I know I had forecasted not great stuff for her. I compared her to someone who could potentially go out there and have like a Deb Eaton experience almost. And it seemed like she went out there and recognized that, hey, I need to watch my tongue. I need to understand that I'm a more stubborn person and that people aren't going to respond that well out here. What did you think of Lauren?
I was hoping for Lauren to do well the whole time. And yeah, it seemed like she had, I wouldn't say a good episode, because I don't know if this is what a good episode looks like for her, because she didn't really do anything. But maybe that's a good sign so far, that no one is coming after her, and that's the only bar you need to clear.
Well, I would also say not only is no one coming after her, but for her to be featured in the episode when no one's coming after her. She seems like the type that they might just leave invisible in a situation like this, even when her tribe ends up going to tribal council. So I was definitely... I gotta stop saying I say definitely all the time, and it's so annoying.
It really is.
Yeah.
How depressing is it, by the way, that that's your best case scenario as a contestant? That, like, you were featured in this amazing, unique, life-altering experience, and the best you can hope for is maybe they'll put me on TV for 10 seconds in 42 minutes.
That's true, and especially every time, whenever Lauren's on TV, like, I almost have to rewind to hear what she's actually saying, because all I can hear is that accent, that, like, Maryland or Pennsylvania, wherever she's from, that O, that I actually... Ian Terry, who's coming, who was on our Week 4 Big Brother podcast, has a little bit of this too. And I was thinking about it when we were talking to him the day after this episode aired about that Maryland O. And actually, I'm going to do it, Dom. I'm going to call an audible here. I'm going to play the clip from a great 30 wow. Rock episode. I tweeted this out, but this is all I can think of whenever I hear Lauren talking. Here is Elizabeth Banks on 30 Rock.
You ever do a commercial for Overshop.com?
Oh, God, I did. Oh, that was before I got rid of my Maryland accent.
Does the O have it? Oh, we do. Do you O? Oh, no. Let go. Oh.
And I'll say for listeners, I haven't heard the clip, so I'm just going to assume that it's hilarious and that Colin's right about everything, and give them the validation that he so clearly is going for here.
Thank you. That is exactly what I was looking for. Okay, Dom, let's get into, I guess, just this vote or tribal council. Any takes on how this played out or anything?
Well, I was gonna ask about Lauren quickly. So we have this segment, which is kind of similar in tone to what Chrissy was saying, but from a very different angle, where she says, I'm a commercial fisherwoman. I spend most of my day working alone. And so I'm not used to having to just like be around and work with all of these people in an environment like this. And I thought that came across as a little bit more, not sincere, because I think Chrissy's was equally sincere, but maybe more relevant in explaining why Lauren is the way she is and how she's playing the game. But you do wonder if like someone like Lauren, does her personality come from being in that environment, or is she drawn to that job because of her personality? It's a kind of chicken and the egg style thing. Because for me, like, I imagine if Lauren had gone into a different line of work, maybe she would have to use those skills differently, or they would come up in different situations, but she would still basically be the same person.
Yeah, Lauren, actually, now that I think about it, kind of strikes me as a very, very old school kind of casting choice, kind of like a modern Sue Hawk almost cast in there that we really just haven't seen them put on the show in a really long time, at least not that I'm remembering. And it's exciting. I know I don't tend to like putting out people that I just don't feel like, frankly, have any realistic chance at all of winning the game. But I do think it is what the show claims to be, is putting people like Lauren out there and having them interact with other people that they're nothing like.
Yeah, I wonder if casting people like Lauren is how Jeff convinces himself that he and production are in tune with Survivor's heritage, almost, that this is faithful to the show's original mission statement, if you like.
Yeah, maybe. I think she definitely does fit in with that. So I guess let's get into this Tribal Council. Any highlights from Tribal Council for you?
I think the one low light that lots of people were talking about is Ryan's birthday party analogy, which really, I'm not quite sure what he was going for there, and no one else seemed to know either. I think that might be a case of him trying to play into that kind of awkward, nerdy superfan role, even though so far he's been doing quite a good job at transcending that. So I a little bit of a odd tone struck there by Ryan, even though I'm still in on Ryan. I'm still liking what I'm seeing so far.
He's definitely giving them what he knows they want, and I agree with you. I think he's doing a good job of it, and he's definitely doing he's certainly doing a better job than Cochran did on that Savai'i tribe, although I would happily grant this is a much easier starting tribe than the Savai'i tribe was for Cochran.
Yeah, he's not a skinny Ryan, he's a thick Ryan, and he needs to understand that and own it and play into it.
Is that his new nickname, Thick Ryan?
Absolutely. That's a thing, though. I don't care if anyone disagrees with me. That is a thing, and whether you are on board with that is a marker of good taste.
All right, fair enough. So any parting thoughts, I suppose, on Simone? Where do you land on the Simone is a terrible to good Survivor player scale?
Well, after all of the heat that was going on her and going from her preseason, it's kind of funny that not only is she the second boot, she's a second boot who was basically invisible for her first episode and made her look terrible in her second. Like, there was really no opportunity for her to be the Courtney Yates, to be the Corinne, the tearing people apart in confessionals and having all the fans go wild over it.
Yeah, I agree. I think, first of all, it was a hugely missed opportunity not to have her be the first one out so we could get that two-hour Wiggler podcast with her. No disrespect to Katrina at all. And secondly, I don't know. I don't know how much of the just kind of general commentary on Simone is impacted, frankly, by, from what I've heard, her boyfriend is a patron on RHAP, and people know him in a lot of the Survivor Twitter world. That is why I think a lot of the Survivor Twitter world was so high on her entering the season, is this kind of tangential connection to RHAP, or maybe even just knowing her boyfriend personally. And I think that has greatly impacted a lot of the commentary that I've seen about Simone in one direction or the other. And frankly, I just don't know how, based on what we saw on the show, which again, I will happily grant could be very far from the reality on Simone. I can't sign off on her being someone who could have been out there crushing Survivor anytime soon.
Yeah, we've seen enough people that we personally and others have completely written off make these deep runs in the show and do so well that it's hard to count anyone out. But Simone is one person who, the moment I saw her preseason stuff, I was like, there is no way this is going well for her. And I think it was a lot of wishful thinking that convinced other people that it could. And that's not a slight against Simone in real life, but I just thought, based on what I saw, like, if I had to pick anyone to be the first one out or the second one out, then Simone would be pretty high on the list. And that's what we saw.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right. I think that's going to do it for the casual Dom and Colin fans. I think let's get into the edit discussion just quickly. I know we have already, we're pushing the hour mark quite liberally at this point, but I think for the people who are tuning out now, you can of course be following Dom on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. And we are at this point going to be diving heavier into the deeper edit discussion. Unless, Dom, anything else you want to get out there for the people that are tuning out?
I think the 1 hour mark was always optimistic, and I hope we never get an episode so boring that we only have an hour's worth of stuff to say about it. So maybe never be bound by the 1 hour constraint. But For the real fans, the real Americans out there, we're now going to get into the editing segment, which is what you've all been waiting for, I'm sure.
Okay. I was going to say, I can't even, it's got to be like 40 or 50 times we've said to each other before a podcast started, all right, this one should be quick. And then an hour and a half later, there we are. Anyway, let's get into the edit discussion. And Dom, let's dive a little bit deeper into Chrissy, because the one point that I would have normally made, had this been an earlier season when we were talking about Chrissy and that fake idol the first time around, is Chrissy cannot leave until that whatever is going to happen with her and that leftover fake idol happens. Like, that is cemented now into the storyline. Something will happen with that, and until it does, she cannot leave.
Aren't there echoes here of us saying the same thing about Sierra Dawn Thomas's advantage, where it's like, oh, but of course, you pencil her in for final six, or and then write that in permanent marker, because there's no way she leaves before then, and then and then that just never comes to fruition at all.
I mean, I feel like last season I was saying maybe it is just the legacy advantage edit that is why we are seeing Sierra Dawn Thomas. I feel I remember saying that many times, is maybe it's just because she has the legacy advantage that we're hearing so much from her. Whereas with Chrissy, it's not like this could go to someone else. If she gets voted out, this is going to leave with her, I would imagine.
Yeah, I agree. I think there is some payoff coming. I think that could come sooner rather than later, though. If that, so let's say we see that either pre-merge or just after the merge, does Chrissy then need to give you something more by then in order for you to still have her up there, or are you expecting that to just come naturally?
Well, to clarify, I don't need to be hearing from Chrissy constantly to continue having her at the top of my board, and I don't need the fake idol to be a recurring storyline through several episodes to keep having her up there either, because frankly at this point I would feel like Chrissy would be my number one. Where are you on that? I feel like, are you in on that? Or Chrissy and Ben, I guess, collectively, that duo would be the people that I'm most optimistic about.
I think I would still have Ben as number one, because I don't know if this is just this is them setting up Chrissy's one big storyline, but she's not going to be relevant outside of that. But I agree. I think this episode was fantastic for her, and she would be right up there along with Ben.
Yeah, and we should probably continue holding this particular speculation off for this edit zone in general, and I'll hopefully not bring this up during the normal sections of our future podcast, but I do want to go back to something we speculated about preseason, and we got a question from Vince Floyd on Twitter, going back to the idea that this might be a tie at Final Tribal Council here between hearing about how the tie would be broken at the Season 34 reunion and now hearing from Jeff that this is going to have some crazy ending. There has been a lot of speculation that this could have a tie, and Chrissy and Ben, I think, are the potential front runners to be the two people involved in that tie. And as Vince Floyd points out, we're seeing these partnerships form, and I would say any partnership I'm looking at is a potential tie duo as well. And we have Ryan and Devin and Allie and Patrick, and I guess a little bit of Cole and Jessica. And out of all of those groups, it really does feel like Chrissy and Ben are being presented almost equally, like an equal partnership, whereas it does feel like Ryan is kind of the leader of the Ryan and Devin group, and Allie is certainly the leader of the Allie and Patrick group, if that's a thing, and Cole is the one leading the Cole and Jessica group.
That's a bold call, or a bold call, if you will, but I can't find anything in there to really disagree with, so I might be on board with that.
Okay, what percentage would you say it is that this is a tie, or is this just more fiction? Roughly, ballpark. Do you think that's crazy, or do you think that's 50-50, or what? Ballpark. Do you think, is it single digits, or is that reasonable?
No, it's not single digits. I think it's reasonable, but how do you even begin to quantify that?
I don't want you to come here at the end of the season and say, oh, I knew the whole time that was never going to happen, or I was sure that was going to happen because Jeff made it so obvious. I want your ballpark now on where you are.
50%, because either it happens or it doesn't.
Okay. It's just good science.
Exactly.
Okay. So I guess let's get a little further into Ben, your boy Ben. What are you liking so much about Ben, particularly after this week?
So game-wise or edit-wise?
Edit-wise, now that we are in the edit zone, what is standing out to you about...
No. Oh, yeah, but surely the whole premise that we base this on is that the two are fairly inseparable as far as our analysis goes.
Okay, like both then.
Okay, like the game analysis follows from the edit analysis.
I'm going to retake it and say both, Dom, is the answer. Both game-wise and edit-wise.
Okay, fine. So what I like so much about Ben is I think if he goes on to win the season, it will be one of the most boring games of Survivor that we've ever seen. It will be just paint by numbers, do everything right, don't make the obvious mistakes. Like, there won't be any big events that he's involved in, no drama. And that's exactly the type of game that you want to play, right? If you can just never have any real challenges, if you can just run it pillar to post, that's perfect. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Ben is the hero, is the heroic underdog who goes on some amazing challenge streak to win the game. But my take is if Ben does go on to win, and I think, you know, I have him near the top of my board. I think there's a decent chance of that right now. It's going to be because he does everything right.
Yeah.
And so for Ben, I don't need to have him be involved in all of this idol shenanigans. I don't need any big drama around him. All I need is for him to just show up and do his thing, and that's what he's doing. So I imagine I'm going to come in here in the future and say, oh yeah, Ben's still near the top of my board. And you'll say, well, he didn't really do anything this episode. And I imagine the response will always be, well, he was there, and that's good enough for me for now.
I definitely agree with all of that. Very well put. And I will be on board with that until further notice. So let's get into, I think my number three, by a pretty wide margin, would be Ryan. I think he continues to look totally like glowing and like a great version of the Cochran that I think they want him to be. And a big piece of why that is so meaningful for me is just the comparison between how they are making him look and how I would imagine they could make him look if they wanted to. And paint him as more of like Cochran 1.0 than Cochran 2.0.
Yeah, that's the exact comparison I was going to make. So wait for taking the wind out of my sails. But yeah, I agree with you that so far he's looking great. And given how bad he could be looking, I think anything above average is a victory.
Yeah. So how about his partner in crime, Devin? Is he on your winner radar at all? Or am I the only one with faith in my boy, Devin?
Still on the radar. I think you made some good arguments. You might be convincing me. I'm coming around. I don't think he's at the top of the board. I think we need to see a little bit more stuff on him over the next few episodes to really flesh that out. But he's still in the mix.
Okay.
And to the extent that you can count anyone out after two episodes, except the people who went home. Sorry, all the Simone fans out there. I don't think Devin is one of those people. I think he's going to be in the mix for quite a long time.
Okay, I would agree with that. And I would say the same thing about Cole. And I know we've made the earlier comparisons between these two. But I think they're in very similar spots where they both have definitely been looking really good to me to this point. Sorry, I'm really going to work on not saying that so much. Unless they start taking like a sharp turn for the worst, I would imagine that they are going to be in there for quite a while, barring like a horrific swap or whatever. They both seem to be coming across really well so far for me. Allie here on the Hustlers Tribe, I know we talked a lot about last week as getting a lot of narration that seemed to be unnecessary in the sense that it could have gone to anyone and they decided to give it to Allie. I would say more of that this week, even though it was, I guess, slightly more specific to her situation than things were in the premiere. Plenty of Allie again this week and really presented as the critical decision maker on this Hustlers Tribe. Where are you on Allie? Where's she on your rankings, I guess?
She might be number one, honestly. Like the big takeaway from this episode is everyone loves Allie and wants to be her best friend, including Simone, who apparently in her exit press was just idolizing her and singing her praises. And we get to hear from her about what her intentions are, what she's thinking about the game, who she trusts and who she doesn't. And it's great for her not only that she has those options that she gets to decide between all those people, but that she gets to articulate it to the camera in a way that leaves everyone coming away impressed from what I've seen.
Yeah, I guess Allie at number one, it somewhat surprises me, but I don't think that's crazy by any stretch. I think she would be my number four at this point, but I guess I'm just seeing she, to me, feels like the person who, come merge time, is going to be like the leader of the alliance that loses the merge, and she's going to be the big power player that goes out at like final 10 or final 9 or somewhere around there.
That could be the case. I don't know. I see better things for Allie in store, though. I think she could be the leader of the successful majority alliance that goes on to have a deep run in the game, and she will be the forerunner from that group, I think.
I certainly wouldn't say that is crazy. Now, I know last week we were high on Rourke. A quick fact check tweeted at me. I wish I remembered who it was. sorry to that person. Rourke only actually had one confessional last week, and I know she was in here. I talked about her as one of my lead candidates, and I think she did get a lot more just kind of incidental around camp talk that wasn't technically a confessional. But so, as you mentioned earlier, nothing this week from Rourke. How far down does she drop for you? Is she? Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
So she only had one confessional last week, but it was a good enough confessional and a long enough confessional that it left you thinking, oh, she was a really solid presence in the episode. And that's what matters. It's not when you put it in, all into a spreadsheet. Oh, in this episode, they had exactly this number of confessionals. So like that's not how it works. It's so much more about the content. And the content that we saw was good. This week, we didn't see any content at all, and that's really concerning for me.
Even though it's episode two, that concerns you? Like Sarah Lacina was nowhere in episode 2, 3, or 4 last season.
Yeah, but that's because you like on an All-Star season, you have so many bigger names to work with. And on that season, most of them were bigger names than Sarah Lacina. This season, at least in theory, everyone is on a more equal footing. So the fact that they couldn't take 30 seconds out of their schedule to give some time to Rourke, like if she was their winner, I think they would be very heavily inclined to do that.
Why, in an episode where we have Cole and Jessica linking up and then also Joe finding this hidden immunity idol after having to bring in a partner Cole to find it and drag that scene out a little further. I'm certainly not ruling Rourke out at any point this episode. Like,
yeah, I guess so. If that's the one storyline they give to the Healers tribe, and by definition only Cole and Joe can really comment on it because they're the only two that were there, there really isn't room for Rourke or Mike, who also was completely invisible this episode too. So yeah, maybe I'm just reading too much into things.
So okay, you're still a Rourkeaholic. Are you in?
Maybe not one of those, but I'm still in on Rourke. Yeah,
you're at least not a Rourke teetotaler.
No, I'm not.
Okay. Anyone else that's you think worth getting into as a serious winner candidate right now? Who are some dark horses if you have any?
So there's no one who's made a strong enough impression so far that I want to bring them up here, which I guess is confirmation that they shouldn't be on the list. I'm curious about Mike. I wonder if he is just going to be this one note character or if he will have any kind of long-term relevance to the game, because I can imagine if it is only to be this imaginary opponent for Joe, then yeah, okay, his storyline is going to begin and end with that. But if he does go on to do other things, I wonder when we need to start seeing those.
I'm going to need to probably see more Mike very soon to start having him in this mix with a lot of these other big contenders for me. I agree. I think Mike definitely has outs to still be a big character over the course of the season. I do not, and I apologize again for saying definitely. I'm really going to work on that. Improve
certainly.
Myself. Certainly. And yeah, you're the thesaurus. I need, give me some more words to use. I don't know any other words, but, I think Mike.
Absolutely. Indubitably is a personal favorite. I'm sure I can come up with more if you give me some time.
Okay. I'm sure you could as well.
How sure are you of that?
Okay. Thank you. I'm not doing it. I'm not biting, Dom. Point being here, I could see Mike God damn it, playing a bigger role in the season. Although a winner is not where I see that coming in. It was truly, when I was editing last week's podcast, I'd never noticed it before. I must have said definitely 50 times last week.
Well, see, I hadn't noticed it until you brought it up now. And I imagine a lot of the listeners wouldn't notice it, but they will now. And you have to be on watch for this going forward. But I think the best way to avoid this is to just not be certain about anything. Don't be humble. Don't have strong views or hot takes. Just give the most non-committal opinions you can find.
I guess so, Dom. I guess that would be the best move. Anything else that you want to get to before we get out of here this week?
So I know Desi was a preseason fan favorite. I know we were both hoping she would do well. Very quiet so far. And I am concerned that if this continues, unless she has a breakout episode soon, she will just be one of those kind of players on the sidelines who never ends up doing anything in the game.
I agree with that. She was someone I had high hopes for. She was my draft pick in the first round of the like 9-person draft that we did with the Podcast House crew, and would certainly love to see more out of Desi soon. But unfortunately, as you mentioned, all we've really gotten to see was her running through the pageants that she's won, which is not a great start, I would say, to any person's season of Survivor. But hopefully more coming from Desi very soon, because I think she surely had a lot of potential based on my read preseason as a Survivor player. All right, Dom. Anything? I think let's just get out of here. Dom is on Twitter at DomHRV. Dom's off there group chatting. Don't even tweet at him. Just group chat him. I am at Colin Stone on Twitter. Dom and Colin at gmail.com if you would like to email us anything. Dom, anything else other than the group chat that you would like to get to before we get out of here?
Yeah, don't worry. I'm good.
Okay. Thank you guys for tuning in. We will talk to you very soon. Take care, everybody.